Chapter 5. He wasn't going to hurt me, Clint said for what felt like the 62nd time. He was getting really, really sick of saying it, and he wished he sounded less like a petulant little boy. It was frustrating as all hell, and he could do without the look Nat was giving him. You didn't know that, Natasha gritted out, her arms crossed over her chest. She was looming over him, her face set in cold lines, her jaw tight. Nat, he started, and she cut him off with a vicious look and a hiss of a word in Russian. Groaning, Clint slumped lower in his chair, his arms crossed, his legs flung out in front of him. Like being back in the principal's office, really. This was fucking ridiculous. Jesus, Nat. You took an unacceptable risk, Steve said, and he was worried. His whole face was creased with it, his mouth a flat line, and his brows drawn up tight. Natasha was pacing now, and Clint stared at them. Why do I feel like a teenager caught out past curfew? He asked, and they exchanged a look. Clint gave a bark of laughter. Seriously, Mom, Dad, I knew what I was doing. Steve let out a sigh, and Natasha threw her hands in the air, and behind them, Fury just sat at his desk, his face blank and still. You didn't have authorization, he said, folding his hands in front of his mouth, his elbows propped on the desk's edge. And I wasn't going to get it, so? Clint slumped lower in his seat. I did it, and it was fine. No one said anything to that, and Clint kicked at the desk. Is everyone forgetting that? It was fine. I was right. And if you'd been wrong, you'd be dead now, Steve said, his voice gentle. Wasn't wrong, Clint sang, his head back. Look. A knock at the door interrupted him, and he tensed, mostly because no one else seemed surprised by the new arrival. Come in, Fury called, and Dr. O'Brien slipped in through the door. Clint lost it. Oh, fuck me, he snapped, rolling to his feet. You have got to be kidding me. Sit down, agent, Fury said, rubbing his forehead. No, you are fucking kidding me, Clint spat, stalking forward. Steve moved to intercept him, an arm coming around Clint's chest, holding him still. No, no, this is a goddamn joke. What the fuck do you think we're doing here? What are you trying to... Fury slammed a hand down in his desk. What were you expecting, agent? He snarled. Really? Help me out here. What were you expecting? A medal? You're a walking psych case. You know this. He surged to his feet, his hands flat on the surface, his shoulders hunched, his eye narrowed into a tight slit. How did you see this playing out? You're a mess. You're pushing the edge of what we can turn a blind eye to. You're barely off suicide watch, and you got to play chicken with the Hulk. He stood up, rubbed his hard jaw with one hand. You didn't think you'd be facing down your psychiatrist at this point? Then you're delusional. I think it's best if we discuss this in my office, O'Brien said, her voice gentle. Stepping between Clint and Fury, she put her hand on Steve's arm, coaxing it away. Clint, why don't we? Clint stared at her, an unfamiliar feeling clawing at his throat. It took him a second to recognize it as betrayal. He let out a bark of laughter, hard and sharp. Fuck you, he said, throwing himself back into the chair. Clint, Natasha said, and O'Brien held up a hand. I can have them leave if you'd prefer, she said. But the two of us need to discuss this together, Clint. You know that. He shook his head. Yeah, you try to order Fury out of his own office. If Director Fury wants me to treat you, then he will have to accept my orders in this matter, she said. And I do want to continue treating you. He smirked up at her. Have you discussed your masochistic tendencies with anyone else in a professional capacity? Clint. He resisted the urge to scream. I'm not going to. And we need to be certain of your mental state right now, Fury said, over and around O'Brien, and her lips tightened, thin brackets appearing on the edges of her mouth as her jaw locked. But she kept her face calm, her body relaxed. Director. No, Fury told her, stabbing a finger against the surface of his desk. No. He stared Clint down. You give me one good reason why I shouldn't toss you into solitary right now. Because if I was going to kill myself, I'd fucking kill myself, Clint yelled, surging to his feet, his hands going to fists at his sides. But I wouldn't make him do it for me. In the silence that followed, he sucked in a heavy breath, his whole body shaking. He dropped back into the seat, dropped his head into his hands. Fuck you all, he said, the words wrung from him. I wouldn't do that to him. He doesn't deserve to wake up and know he killed me. Fuck you if you think I would. But I went because I knew he wouldn't hurt me. Everyone was still. Dr. O'Brien took a breath, then turned to the others. I need to ask you to leave. I need to speak with my patient.
I don't want to talk to you, Clint said. So, why so attached, Doc? Not done with your paper on me?
Not done with your defense mechanisms? She responded, her voice even. I thought we were beyond that.
And I thought you knew I wasn't trying to kill myself, he said, shrugging. Guess we were both wrong.
Her eyes slid closed. Then she crouched down in front of him, not retreating to a chair, not standing over him. And it should have felt like she was babying him, treating him like a child. But her eyes were on level with his, her face calm and open. It is my professional opinion that you are not suicidal, she said. That is what I said when they told me that you were doing this. When they called me and asked me if they needed to intercede, if you could be trusted to do what you were trying to do, I went with my professional opinion and my personal gut feeling, and that you are not suicidal, and that you moved with a purpose today, and that purpose was not your own death. I stand by that decision. Her lips curled up. Just a bit. But the thing we have in common, Clint? If either one of us had been wrong, you would have died. She stood. Trust was extended to you today. By your boss, by your team, and by me. Her chin came up. And now you get to explain what was happening, so we can move forward. He glanced at her.
I knew what I was doing.
I know that. But you need to explain what you were doing, because we don't, she said. We trusted you. He made a rude noise under his breath, and her head tipped to the side. We trusted you, she repeated. Each word weighed. And now you can repay that trust by explaining what happened. Clint glanced away from her, away from Steve and Natasha, who were side by side now, a united front, Steve's worried eyes and Natasha's unhappy mouth. And behind them, Fury, his expression buried behind his folded hands, his eye a single gleaming point of contact. And they waited silently. He rubbed a hand over his face. They can't use a trank gun on him, Clint said, his voice quiet. I don't think you get that. You're not seeing that. But that's reality. The dosage was precisely calculated to work with. Fury started, and Clint waved him off. But it doesn't, he said. I've watched the tapes. It's not going to work. Steve studied him, then gave a faint dip of his chin, the smallest hint of a nod. Okay, he said. I've watched the tapes too. Most of us have. What are you seeing that we are not?
Yeah, that'd be nice to know, Tony Stark said, the words coming as he strode through the door without knocking.
He leaned against the doorframe, his arms crossed over his chest, his eyes narrowed.
Bruce is awake. He's been asking to see you.
Do you think that's really a good idea? Steve asked. He's been under a lot of stress already today. Tony pushed a hand over his head, disordering his hair.
He's not taking our word for it that Barton's fine, Stark said to Steve. He's freaking out, and we really don't need that right now.
Freaking out is putting it a little. Bruce was leaning heavily on Thor's arm, his feet bare, his body hunched into the hospital blues. His lips twitched, a humorless little smile. Okay, probably true.
Oh, darn, Tony said, deadpan. They followed me.
He strode into the office, ignoring the look of flaming death that Fury aimed at him.
Come on, Banner, have a seat. I'm exhausted just looking at you.
Bruce paused, his fingers digging into Thor's shoulder. You're all right? He asked Clint, his face shuddered and miserable. Clint stood and nodded at the chair.
I'm fine, you know that.
Bruce stared at him for a moment, and his shoulders rose and fell in a shuddering sigh.
Yeah, yeah.
He fumbled for the chair, and his hand was shaking, and Clint caught his arm. With him on one side and Thor on the other, they lowered Bruce into the chair. Clint glanced up at Thor, who gave him a nod and a faint smile.
Thanks, Bruce muttered, crossing his arms over his stomach, huddling into his own body. His face was pale, his skin shallow and damp.
He avoided everyone's eyes, and Stark came in behind him, one solid hand coming down on Bruce's shoulder.
Hail, hail, the gang's all here, Fury said, his voice sardonic. Want to go over what passed for your thought process in this situation, Agent? 'Cause I'm sure we're all just fucking fascinated.
Clint shrugged, uncomfortable now. It's the guns, Clint said, the words quiet in the silence. We can't go after him with guns.
Guns don't stop him, Natasha said. And they don't hurt him.
They don't hurt him, but they still hurt, Clint said.
Steve and Tony exchanged a look, and Clint huffed out a breath.
Ever been hit with BB gunshot or paintball pellets? They don't hurt you, but they fucking hurt. You won't bleed. You won't be injured, but nobody willingly takes a pellet or a paint load to the chest from close range. It hurts. People shoot at him, and it hurts. Even if it doesn't actually do him any harm, it hurts, and he knows what a gun is.
Clint slashed a hand through the air. People come after him with guns, and people hurt him. The reaction to the gun, to the shape of it, the sound it makes, the way people stand when they aim a rifle, it's a fucking gun. The reaction is instinctive. Because there's no way to explain the difference between someone who's trying to kill him and someone who's trying to help him. A gun is a gun. And he's seen too many guns. He's had too many guns used against him for a gun to ever work.
Clint rubbed a hand over his face, all his nerves jangling at once, exhaustion and frustration and panic still lingering down deep. He kept moving, kept doing anything to keep from showing how his hands were shaking. It's instinctive. It's a survival instinct. Adrenaline spikes, brain starts pushing all sorts of happy chemicals because it's been trained that guns mean pain.
So the drinks don't work, Stark mused. His foot was rattling against the ground, and there was a pattern, something going on with a rhythm that Clint couldn't understand.
So the drinks don't work, Clint agreed. You need to acknowledge that the drinks will not work when loaded into a gun. A shield agent holding a drink gun is just another threat that needs to be neutralized.
But he doesn't know the bow, Thor said. His eyes narrowed.
'Tis not a weapon used over much in this world.
Yeah, I'm kind of a freak of nature over here, Clint said. So he's had no experience with a bow, with arrows. They've never been used against him. He might not like it. He might not like me. But his brain hasn't been conditioned to punch first and ask questions later.
It's too risky, Steve said.
The same trank load, the same distance, the same everything, Clint said, frustrated now. The only thing that's different is the weapon being used for delivery. Don't do this to him. Don't make 100 shield agents gang up on him and put both them and him in danger, not when one person with a bow can do the same thing without sending him into a complete panic or rage and hurting him.
But the one person has to be you. Bruce was quiet about it, his head down. Doesn't it?
Clint paused.
No, it doesn't have to be. Look, it's not a hard shot to take. The person taking it just to be honest about the fact that they're taking it.
The person taking it has to make eye contact with the Hulk and not turn tail and run, Natasha corrected. We don't have that many crazy agents, Clint.
Are you looking at the same fucking employment files that I am? Clint shot back. Because we've got a hell of a lot of crazy agents. We just need to find the right kind of crazy.
Or just eliminate the middleman and make you do it, Tony said. He crossed his arms. I'm in favor of that. Simple solution right there. Make you carry out your own crazy.
And I will, for... Clint swallowed the rest of the words.
Yeah.
He glanced at Bruce, who didn't look up.
Look, it'll be easier this way. I know you. He knows me, at least a little now. There's no reason to throw someone else at him. Not right now.
His bow was in reach, and he reached for it, stroking a hand over the familiar lines.
He won't hurt me.
Why? Bruce asked at last. His head still down, dark hair tipped over his forehead, hands worrying at the edges of his shirt. Why do you think that, Clint?
Clint stopped, exhaled.
Because he stopped.
When Bruce's fingers stilled, Clint glanced at Natasha.
When he was chasing you, on the helicarrier, I watched the footage.
Her lips tightened, but she was good, was his gnat. She didn't flinch, didn't pull away, just studied him, her gaze level.
He stopped.
When Thor hit him, yes, Natasha said.
Clint shook his head.
No, before that.
He took a deep breath.
He stopped because he recognized you.
What?
Clint glanced around.
He woke up on the carrier confused and angry and hurting, and then there were loud noises and explosions and a moving target, and you had a gun, Nat. And even though you didn't attack him, he was frustrated and confused, and he attacked. But when you fell, when you looked up, that was the first time he saw your face in direct light, and that's when he stopped.
He paused, his thumb worrying the shaft of the arrow. Before Thor hit him, he knew who you were, and he knew that you weren't a threat.
His eyes closing, he let out a breath.
He doesn't attack bystanders. He doesn't hurt people he knows. He doesn't attack people who aren't a threat. They might get hurt. But he doesn't attack someone who's just standing there terrified. He never went after anyone who wasn't attacking him.
We can't trust in that, Bruce said, his voice quiet.
Oh, come on! Clint spread his hands wide. You all know it. Every person in this room knows it. He stabbed a finger at Stark. Your whole plan hinged on him coming and fighting on our side. His eyes cut toward Steve. You talked to him. You gave him damn orders, and you fully expected him to take them and not punch you into a building.
He twisted around, facing Thor.
You talked to him. The entire time you were fighting him, you talked to him.
To Natasha. And so did you. Even as you were losing him, you talked to him the whole time.
He swung back to Bruce. And you said that he'd catch me. You said that he would catch me, and that implies that he'd recognize me as on your side, and he'd care if I lived or died. Were you lying to me? Were you fucking lying to me?
No. Bruce met his eyes without flinching. His mouth twitched. But I was always depending on the fact that I knew you wouldn't take the chance that the other guy would hurt someone else once we hit the sidewalk.
Clint huffed out a laugh. Fuck you, he said, and Bruce smiled back at him.
He's not our enemy, Clint said. He's not. And everyone in this room knows it.
The room was silent, still, and Clint's shoulders slumped, all his energy, all his strength disappearing in an instant.
He's only an enemy if we make him one, he said, with a one-shoulder shrug. And I don't think we need to do that. That's all.
It was Natasha who spoke first.
You know, when you start talking sense, she said, her voice holding a sardonic bite, I know I'm screwed.
He grinned at her. You and me both.
But it is sense, Stark said.
I don't think, Bruce started, and Tony rolled his eyes. Bruce gave him a look, and Tony smirked at him, the two of them going through a range of facial expressions so fast that it might count as silent theater.
Steve shifted his weight.
Good job, he said.
And it took Clint way too long to understand that the comment and his straightforward gaze was meant for him. Steve was smiling, just a little.
Clint shrugged, not sure how to respond.
Banner, I'd like you to stay the night for observation, Fury said.
Hey, I don't think, Tony said.
And this time, Bruce interrupted him. I'd prefer that, actually. His lips twitched. He gave Thor a quick glance.
If you can, would you?
I shall stay as well, Thor said, smiling.
Tony made a face. Fine, he groused. He stood. Let's get you back down to medical. I'm so looking forward to sleeping in a plastic chair.
Who asked you to stay? Bruce asked, smiling.
Tony waved him off. Now, what we have to do, he said as they left the office. No one appeared to be listening to him. It didn't appear to bother him in the least.
Am I dismissed? Clint asked.
Because O'Brien had a look on her face, a look that meant that she had things she wanted to discuss, and he wasn't up for that right now. He wanted desperately to get out of this room, to get away from these people.
Fury nodded, and Clint moved towards the door. He paused behind O'Brien.
Get me cleared for field work, and there's a 20 in it for you, Clint said to her.
She gave him a look.
You must be joking.
Okay, fine. 50.
A little bit better. She smiled, just a little.
I want to see you tomorrow, at 9.
Clint bit back a swear.
Yeah, okay.
He knew better than to argue. It wasn't going to work out for him anyway. Not with Fury looking like he'd still like to have Clint in a nice padded cell somewhere.
I'm gonna just...
He hooked a thumb after Bruce and Thor and Tony.
Just check on them.
He was halfway to the door when Fury's voice stopped him.
Barton!
Reluctantly, Clint turned around.
Sir?
Fury was expressionless. Snag another trank and go sit with Banner. I need to talk to Stark and Thor. Clint stared at him for a second, not sure how to take that. Fury arched an eyebrow.
Have a problem following orders, Barton?
No, sir, he said at last. I'll send them right up, sir. He didn't think much on what that order meant, or what the look that Steve and Natasha exchanged meant, or the fact that O'Brien was settling down in the chair, her face smooth and calm. None of it mattered. He could follow orders. Sometimes. Stark and Thor could, too, if pressed. And it took some pressing. It was Bruce, pale and drawn against his bedsheets, who ordered them out, the flare of the lights on his glasses hiding his eyes. But he said go, and they went, leaving Clint to hover just inside the door. He held up the trank arrow, his bow over his shoulder. I'm going to sit with you until management is through discussing me, he said, giving Banner a tight smile. Bruce removed his glasses, and he looked tired, far too tired.
Don't you mean when they're done with discussing us? He asked, a thread of humor to his words.
He waved his hand at the visitor's chair beside the bed. Sit down. You look like you're on your last legs.
I'm not sure I can accept that from you, Clint said with a faint smile.
But he took the seat, adjusting the chair so it wasn't angled straight towards the bed any longer. He wasn't up for eye contact. Not right now.
However bad I look, you look worse.
And I'm in medical. What does that tell you? Bruce asked. He let out a sigh as Clint sat down.
You shouldn't have done that.
Clint shrugged, his fingers running over and over the lines of his bow.
Yeah, the list of things I shouldn't have done is so long that adding one more thing to it doesn't much matter, you know?
His lips twitched.
And I'm gonna do it again. So, guess you'd better get used to it.
Can I see? Clint glanced up and found Bruce's eyes on the bow in his hands.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He handed it over, and Bruce took it with careful hands. That was nice. It was nice when his bows were treated with respect. After all, his life depended on them.
Name?
What? Clint's feet shifted against the tile floor.
Did you...
Bruce's face creased in a frown.
You said it had a name.
Yeah, it does. Clint crossed his arms over his chest, defensive about it.
Lachesis.
Bruce's eyes came up, his eyebrows arching.
The Greek fate? He asked,
a smile smoothing the pain from his features. Clint gave a half shrug.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
He sighed. They decided who lived and who died,
how long each person has, what end everyone would come to, right? The fates. Forcing his arms away from his body, he leaned forward, running the calloused tip of his index finger along the line of the bowstring. The thread of life. Bruce was studying him, and Clint slumped back into his chair. This is Lachesis. I took this one. I took this one because I wasn't going to kill you, and you weren't going to kill me. But whatever happened today? His lips curled up, just a little, and the smile felt sad, even to him. Would be taking the measure of both of us. The bow was lowered to the bed on Bruce's lap. He kept his hands there on the curve of the grip. Did we measure up? Clint looked at him out of the side of his eyes, careful now, on unfamiliar ground. I think I got your measure, he said at last. And his. Bruce's fingers went white on the grip, and that was fine. If you had to hold on to something with all the strength in your hands, in your arms, all the strength that you could muster, that bow was a good thing to hold on to. That bow had flexed beneath Clint's grip more times than he could remember, and it held, it always held, a focal point that he could always count on. He inhaled, and his fingers relaxed. He smiled and held the bow out to Clint. Thank you. Clint shrugged again, reaching for his weapon, for his crutch. But Bruce refused to relinquish it. He met Clint's eyes. Thank you, he repeated. Look, Clint said, exhaling hard. Maybe I don't. I don't know you. I don't claim to know about any of this. But maybe it was always easier for me to come out, to come back, when someone was waiting for me. The words stumbled to a halt, and he resisted the urge to kick something, or just get up and stalk out. Coulson used to call me back, and it was... His throat closed up, and he stopped, humiliation and actual taste in his mouth. Never mind. It is easier, Bruce said, his voice quiet. To know that someone... His jaw worked, and he slumped back into his pillows. Isn't afraid of him. Of me. Relief washed over him, and Clint bent forward, bracing his elbows on his knees, his bow hanging loose in his fingers. I can't say I'm not afraid, he said. I'm afraid, but I'm... He glanced up. As much afraid for him as I am afraid of him right now. So I'll do my best to protect you both. If I can. Bruce's breath was shaking, his face in shadows. Thank you. Clint shrugged. Angling the chair, he pushed it closer to the wall so he could keep an eye on the door. Just, you know, get some sleep, okay? It's gonna be... Was it a lie? He didn't know anymore. Fuck it. He'd always been a very accomplished liar. It's gonna be okay. Bruce choked on a laugh. Yeah, okay. He leaned back. You don't have to stay. Clint shrugged, bracing one arm on the bed rail, leaning into it. They're probably still discussing me. Might as well give him some privacy for that, right? Thor'll come spot me later. You don't have to. We know. He leaned his head against the wall. Shut up and go to sleep, Doc. There was a small pause. Thank you. Bruce? Yeah? Clint didn't look in his direction. Don't jump. Because I think I'll end up going after you. He felt Bruce's hand cover his, the touch tentative, cautious. Clint latched onto it, latched onto that ordinary, commonplace contact. For just a moment, he allowed himself that, the warmth of Bruce's hand in his. And it hurt. Not because the grip was too hard or uncomfortable, but because he knew it was going to end. He sat there, waiting for Bruce to pull away, waiting for him to take his hand back. But when Bruce's breathing smoothed out into soft, even snores, he was still holding Clint's hand. Clint stayed there, watching the door. It was easier, Clint found,
to keep breathing, if he was doing it for someone else. Sometimes he would dream about the lake. Not often, not anymore, but occasionally, when he was worn out and worn through, too tired and stretched too thin, he would find himself back on that shore. He'd find his battered boots on the rocky ground, watching as the water licked against blood-stained rocks and left ice behind as it retreated. He would stand there and let the cold sink into his skin, into his flesh, down into his bones, until he couldn't feel anything at all. She was there, again, that wraith that chased him, who stared at him with sad eyes. "Why are you here again?" she asked, and he shrugged. "I met him here. He saved my life here." The words were exhaled in clouds of water vapor, wisps of condensation that burned his lips. "Here, the first time, not the last." "You will die if you do not leave the water's edge."
"Then I'll die." She sighed. She was often impatient with him.
"Why will you not leave?" He took a breath, another, tried not to exhale, tried to fill his lungs to bursting. "Because he is dead. Because I killed him." His feet shifted against the edge of the shore, boots rattling the water-smooth stones, and it sounded like bones settling. Eyes closing, he let himself fall forward into the water and let it close over him. This time, he was sure there was no one coming for him. There was no one left to come for him.
"I'm not singing Oklahoma."
"I didn't ask you to."
"It was implied. I'm not stupid. I got that implication. I'm from Iowa, not Oklahoma. I know that for you coastal people, the whole middle of the country is a grand expanse of cornfields and hayseeds, but I am not."
He inhaled, his lungs flexing along with his arms, and he came to stillness for an instant before he released the arrow.
"Going to sing Oklahoma."
Dr. O'Brien tapped her pen against her jaw, her eyebrows arched.
"Coastal people?"
"Anyone." The arrow thudded into the target, and another in quick succession. "From the edges of the country. You know, coastal people." "I'm sensing a certain amount of derision here, Agent Barton." She stood, letting her pad and pen down on the simple chair she'd dragged into the range with her. Without being prompted, she picked up the arrows from the nearby table. "Ready?" Clint rolled his shoulders, shook out the fingers of his draw hand. Inhaling, he nodded. She shifted a single arrow to her right hand, holding the rest in her left. There was something off about that visual, the stark lines of the ammunition hanging loose between her soft fingers. The drapes of her skirt formed a backdrop for the brilliant tips, silver and black against the red of the fabric. She was bright this morning, a flame in motion, and he liked her shoes, black with licks of red against the soles. Clint brought his head around, focusing on the target.
"Pull," he said, and she flicked the arrow to him.
He snagged it out of midair, and with one smooth, fluid motion, he set it to the string, drew, and fired. Without pause, without adjusting, he took the shot.
"Pull," he repeated, and she threw the next one.
Muscle memory and split-second decision-making pulled him along, the shots flying as fast as he could call for another arrow, as fast as she could throw, as fast as he could set the shaft of the arrow against the still vibrating string. One after another, until his arms and his eyes burned, until everything but the bullseye washed away in a haze of determination. "Done," she said, her voice soft, and Clint sucked in a huge breath, the air rushing through him, making him dizzy. Instinctively, he took a step back from the firing line, his bow dropping to his side. She moved closer, stepping up beside him to stare down the length of the range. "That's impressive," she said, and Clint turned away, heading back to the table. He shrugged as he uncapped his water bottle and tipped it to his lips. "Are you uncomfortable with hearing that?" He took a moment to drink, to use that to avoid the question. But when he was forced to lower the bottle, he met her eyes, defiant.
"It's a rare ability," he said, tossing the empty bottle to the table. "So I hear it a lot." "I know, so hearing it again doesn't exactly change
He stopped, shaking his head. No, I'm not. O'Brien returned to her chair, collecting her pad and pen and settling down, her spine straight and her shoulders back in the simple wooden chair. Is that why you choose times when the range is empty to practice? Clint stretched, one arm over his head, the other holding it in place, putting just the right amount of pressure on his muscles. Guns mean muffs, he said. And muffs mean not being able to hear my string or my target, and that's annoying as all fuck. So most of the time, I hit here early or late as possible and try to isolate myself. His teeth locked together because, wow, that was not what he'd meant to say. It's easier to do this alone. And she must be having a field day with this, really. Despite the fact that, for once, her pen was still in her fingers. Look, I'm well aware that I'm a step above a sideshow attraction, and I prefer not to deal with that every fucking day, okay? The junior agents will show up to gape no matter what I do. Does it bother you? If it bothered me, I would have stuck with a rifle, Clint pointed out. Doing my work with a bow pretty much means I'll be that guy. She nodded. You're avoiding other agents, she said. He shifted arms, arching his back. No fucking way, he deadpanned. Really? I am? Wow, it's almost like I turned traitor and killed a bunch of my coworkers. Fun times. Her blink was slow, controlled. You didn't, actually. Even your attack on the main bridge, you didn't. Yes, I did, he snapped, cutting her off. Because I brought them on board. I did that. I got them past the protocols, got them on board the carrier, and everyone that died that day, it's because I made it possible. So fuck yes, I'm avoiding my coworkers, because I don't even know what I'm doing here anymore. I don't know why someone hasn't put a knife in my back. I don't know... Too late, he choked back the flow of words. Inhaling, he dropped his arms to his sides, fingers open and loose and helpless. So while I appreciate the work of Hammerstein, I will not be singing Oklahoma for you, he said, as if that made sense, as if he could push himself back into something resembling sanity and safety with will alone. And it hurt. Everything hurt. He reached for the bow, and she said, You sing often, though.
Is that on my file? He asked.
It's common knowledge. Her smile was soft, real. I heard you once or twice, singing down in medical. Mostly, I suspect, to annoy the staff. Your voice is very nice. Clint shrugged, doing his checks on his bow with methodical fingers. But you don't sing as much now. I don't sing at all, Clint corrected, because the words were ash in his mouth, the remains of memories burned to dust, and he choked on it. Most days, it was all he could do to keep breathing. He had nothing left over, no life, no breath, no hope, nothing to make into song. How are you adjusting to your team? O'Brien asked. And he hated that, hated how he had his defenses up about one topic, braced and ready, and she switched gears so fast that she was hitting him where he had no armor, where she could blindside him. I was in Fury's office, she said, cutting him off, her lips curled up in a faint smirk. So let's skip the lies and go back to distracting and changing the subject. But the lying is getting tiresome. Clint sighed, even as he broke his bow down. You are really bitchy, you know that? She hummed in agreement. How's your team?
Crazy, he said, because that was the default. Stark and Rogers got into a yelling match about something yesterday, and no, I don't know what. I don't even pay attention to it anymore. They mix like oil and vinegar. It's just a joy to watch.
Not oil and water?
Nah. If you give them a shake, they're perfect together, but it takes a hell of a lot of agitation, Clint said. And he grinned when she laughed. Get him agitated enough and boom, fantastic.
Why?
Why are they fantastic together? Polar opposites, hot and cold, controlled an impulse, training and intuition. Perfect complement to one another if they can get their heads out of their asses and stop being so stubborn. He grinned, and it was okay to think about these people. To talk about these people, to know that even if he was isolated and alone, even if he could hear the whispers in his wake as he walked the halls, as he struggled to keep himself together, to draw his dignity and his pride around him like a cloak, that these people didn't care,
that if anything, he was the quiet one, the unassuming one, the unnecessary one. In S.H.I.E.L.D.'s ranks, he was in a class by himself, the elite and the fallen. When it came to the Avengers, he might as well be invisible. "We've talked about Tony Stark," she said. She glanced up. "Does Rogers have a bird?" "Steve Rogers," he said, running careful fingers over the structure of the arrows, one after another, "is a Harris's hawk." O'Brien grinned, and he wasn't sure why, and he wasn't sure if he cared why. "I know those," she said. "A bit, at least. From the Southwest, aren't they?"
"Yeah."
Clint checked the tip of one arrow, smoothing the pad of his thumb along the edge, along the flat of it. Broad and buff and well-suited for the desert. Most birds of prey hunt on their own, and the Harrises can. It is an excellent hunter. Fast and smart and efficient. But what sets the Harris's hawk apart is that it's a pack hunter. What skills it has, what intelligence, what speed, what grace, is amplified with a group. Their strength, their true nature, is best revealed when they're in a group. They hunt with brutal accuracy, and they're able to take down bigger, stronger prey because they can work together, because they can, because their inclination is to work as a group. They are stronger when they're not alone, and that's rare in the bird world, even rarer in the raptor world. Clint set an arrow aside with more care than was necessary, but his fingers weren't still, weren't stable. They employ multiple tactics. They alter their behavior depending on prey and group size, and they'll accept hawks from outside of direct family lines, because it makes sure that everyone eats. "That's important," O'Brien said. "In the desert, yes, it is. But they're social and socialized." He packed his weapons with easy movements, his hands moving by rote now. Falconry has existed for hundreds, for thousands of years. And about 50 years ago? Just 50 years ago, people started to focus on working with Harris's hawks, and they took to human control, human cooperation, like almost nothing in the history of falconry. In 50 years, in less than 50 years, they've gone from being almost unknown to being one of the most popular birds to train in the Western world, because in the right hands, they are amazing. He paused, his hands on the lid of his case. Steve Rogers makes the people around him better. I kind of want to hate him for that, because he'll drag you along in his wake. He'll raise you to his level. Not out of shame, not out of anger, but out of... He stopped, his eyes narrowing. Because he puts this trust in you, and you want to live up to it, even if you're not capable of doing that. Even if there's nothing left in you, he'll ask, and somehow you'll manage to push yourself for one more step, one more shot, one more moment in time. And no matter what, you want to be better when he's around. He closed the case with a final-sounding click and flicked the latches into place. "Guy still thinks he's leading a military squadron against the bad guys," he said. And the sarcasm was still there, like a warm, familiar blanket, the disdain. But under that was something he wasn't sure of and wasn't comfortable with. "Still thinks he's fighting the good fight. And we're long past that." "But you follow him," O'Brien said, and it wasn't a question. "Yeah," Clint said. "Why?" He considered that. "Maybe," he said at last. "It's nice to know that I'm working with someone who won't leave me behind when I'm no longer useful, when there's a different objective to secure, when there's a deal to be made." "Do you think S.H.I.E.L.D. would?" He gave her a look. "I know S.H.I.E.L.D. would," he said, tired now. "I'm well aware of just who and what Director Fury is, Doc. And I'm not his buddy, I'm not his kid, I'm just a tool. Useful for as long as I'm useful, and I fully expect to be discarded when I'm no longer capable of performing. That's reality. That's the spy biz. That's S.H.I.E.L.D. And anyone who doesn't know that he'd lie, cheat, and betray you if he thought it necessary is in for a rude shock when it does happen." His lips twitched. "Because it will happen. Sooner or later, he will turn on you. He will use you. You will be sacrificed for the greater good." "Is that what you thought, Agent Cole?" "No," he said, too loud, too sharp. "No. Agent Coulson was a rare exception around this place, and he's dead, so it doesn't matter." He snatched his case from the table, and it rattled loud and sharp as he swung it to his side.
He's dead, and what faith I had in S.H.I.E.L.D. died with him, because everything ended when he died. This is a different place, and a different world, and... He stopped, his breathing too loud, too sharp. You want to know why I don't sing? Because I'll sing at his funeral. When Director Fury allows his funeral to happen, and then that's it. I don't have anything left to sing about. All that's left in me is a funeral dirge. When that's passed, I'm done. Clint stalked for the door. What the fuck do I have to sing about? The repairs were going well. Clint jammed his hands in his pockets, taking slow, careful breaths through his mouth. The air still smelled of smoke and stone dust. He wasn't sure if that was in his mind or the actual construction, but he didn't question it. There really wasn't much point. If he was crazy, it was a pretty strong crazy. He moved through the crowd, trying not to think, trying not to see, and it was hard. It was hard to be outside right now. Too many people, too much noise. Here at the ground level, where he couldn't think and couldn't cope, and his pulse was pounding, his breath too thin in his lungs. He kept going out. He wasn't sure why, not really, and at first Natasha shadowed him. Hell, she might still be shadowing him. It was Natasha. She was very good at her job, and her job was to keep tabs on him. But she'd pulled back to the point where he didn't see her out of the corner of his eye anymore, didn't catch the flicker of her slim form through the crowd, didn't spot the creamy pale curve of her cheek, the proud angle of her shoulder. She let him wander, more or less alone. She still slept against his back, and he didn't complain, didn't even think to complain, because he was so desperately grateful for that, for the way she curled against his spine. Warmth and breath and a solid grip. He loved that, most of all, that she held on to him. Not for her. Natasha had never been much of a cuddler. She held on for him, so he could feel the strength in her arms, in her hands, and know that he wasn't alone, wasn't going to be left alone, wasn't going to wake up not knowing where he was when the nightmares took hold. The solid, unmistakable center of his world was Natasha, holding on tight, no matter what. He stared at a nearby building, head up, watching the cranes move, watching what he was pretty sure was an Asgardian crew lift new girders into place. Trying to stay out of the way, he was still jostled by a few pedestrians with places to be, and no time for the idiot who was standing on the sidewalk gaping at the construction. He was used to it. No point in taking offense when someone bumped into you in New York. It was too common of an occurrence. A kid appearing out of the crowd at a full run to fling himself at Clint. That was a little more unusual. Clint jerked backwards as the kid slammed into his side, too hard, too fast, his arms going around Clint's waist in a death grip. The boy was grinning up at him, wide and bright, showing off a gap in his front teeth. His fingers sank into the fabric of Clint's jacket, pulling hard, as if he was afraid Clint would slip out of his grasp. "It's you!" Clint stared down at him, confused, as a young woman came running up, her face flushed, her dress fluttering around her legs. "John!" She grabbed his wrist and pulled him away. "Don't run away from me!" Her voice was shaking, and her eyes, when they cut up to Clint's face, were wet. "I'm so sorry," she said. "I am so, so sorry. He..." "It's him," the boy said, grinning at her and back to Clint. "It's you!" "Sorry," Clint said, and the woman lifted the boy off of his feet, pulling him away. "I have never been so embarrassed in my life," she hissed at the boy, but her arms were tight, her face pressed against his short black hair. To Clint, she added, "Really, I'm so sorry. We were..." She swallowed hard. "We always took the bus through here, and then when the..." She set the boy back on his feet, gripping his hand with firm fingers. "When they came," she said, pulling him close to her side, her free hand stroking his hair. "When the sky fell in, we were on the bus. We were on the bus, and it..." She was shaking, and Clint held up his hands, trying to look non-threatening, and he was well aware that he wasn't too good at that under the best of circumstances. "Hey, it's okay," he said, wishing that he had something better to say. "It's okay, miss. I'm sorry." She laughed, a watery little cough. "We were on the bus," she said,
and her chin came up. And those things were shooting. We were trapped.
And you lifted me out of the bus, the boy said, from under the shelter of his mother's hand. He grinned at Clint, his eyes big and full of life. Out the window!
Clint's stomach bottomed out. For an instant, he weaved on his feet, lightheaded and unstable. The roar of blood in his ears was enough to drown out everything else, the noise of horns and car engines, the voices of everyone around him, all of it washed out in a blur of white noise. He snapped back into himself with a force that left him stunned, and he was on the ground. He was sitting on his ass on the filthy sidewalk, a ring of concerned faces over him, around him.
Is he okay? A big guy in battered construction gear was asking, even as he crouched down. Hey, buddy, you okay? You just went down there like a
He spotted the kid and cleared his throat.
You dropped like a brick.
Clint opened his mouth, trying to say something, and there were people staring down at him, hands outstretched, and it was a nightmare for a second. It was fire and screams and the clatter of metal and stone. His fingers scrambled against the pavement, his breath coming in ragged gasps. He's fine, the woman was saying, smiling nervously at the bystanders. Please, just give him a second. The construction guy nodded, jamming a battered hard hat back on his head.
Yeah, yeah, sure, ma'am, he stood. Okay, okay, nothing to see here, he said. And he was big. He was big and rough, and if anyone felt like arguing with him, they didn't say so. In a matter of moments, the crowd had broken up, leaving them more or less alone.
The woman was still next to Clint, her hand on his arm.
Are you all right? She asked, her voice quiet.
Clint nodded, avoiding her eyes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't.
He sucked in a breath, slow and steady through his nose, until he felt a little less like puking on his shoes. She reached out, pressing a gentle hand to his neck, pushing his head down. You look gray, she said, her lips twitching. She fumbled at her purse with her free hand.
John, go and get a bottle of water from the taco truck over on the corner.
Just when he didn't think it was possible to feel worse, there the world was, determined to prove him wrong.
Don't, really, I'm... He tried to stand, and it wasn't happening. His knees felt like liquid, his head spinning.
Cursing low and sharp, he dropped his head back down, struggling to breathe.
Please don't.
It's fine. She pressed the bills into the boy's hand, and he was off like a shot, heading for the truck. She glanced back at Clint.
Slow, slow, she said, patting him on the shoulder, the touch tentative.
His face burning, Clint swallowed his humiliation.
I'm fine.
Yeah, she said, and her hand was shaking as she hiked her purse higher on her shoulder.
Were you in it too?
Clint considered lying, but it was more effort than he could manage.
Yeah, he said, scrubbing a shaking hand over his face.
Yeah. It's okay, she said, and she seemed to mean it. It's okay. It hits you sometimes, the memories, the fear. It gets to all of us.
John slipped back through the crowd, a dripping bottle of water in his hand.
Here, he said, holding it and the bills out to his mother.
He wouldn't take the money.
Clint glanced up, and the vendor gave them a little wave. The woman dipped her head in a respectful nod, even as she cracked the lid off the water. Clint accepted the bottle from the woman, chugging half of it in one long swallow. He wiped his mouth on the back of his wrist.
He said, if you need to sit down, he's got a chair, John said, and his mother pulled the boy in, kissing his forehead.
John never took his eyes off of Clint. Big, dark eyes. Eyes that Clint couldn't bear meeting.
Do you need to sit down? She said.
She fumbled in her pocket, in her purse, finding a packet of tissues from God knows where. Clint never understood that, how moms seemed to have everything that they could possibly need somewhere. Somewhere. She took the bottle back from him and poured a little of the water on a tissue.
Here, wipe your face. It helps.
Where did you come from? John asked, grinning, almost bouncing. Do you live in New York? Are you an Avenger? Because they talked about the Avengers on the TV. I watched all of it. I saw the things, but I kept asking, and you weren't... The woman was watching Clint's face, and she wrapped an arm around his shoulder. Baby, it's not him. John's smile slipped.
Yes, it is. I remember.
His brows drawing together, he stared at Clint.
I remember. I know who you are.
It's not. She gave Clint an apologetic smile. He was here too, so you might remember him, but he's not. He's not the man who saved you. It was there in flashes, in his head, fragments of memory, as if the noise and panic and death had fractured everything, even as he dragged himself back to life. Even as he'd fought, he'd felt that same distance, the same helpless distance that had kept him from doing anything when Loki was... But he remembered. The boy's hands closing on his arms, so hard, pinpricks of force that shook him awake. If only for an instant, he remembered that face, gray with ash and fear, and the reflection of the fires that burned. This child, this boy, this New Yorker.
It is, John was saying now, fierce with it, stubborn. It is. It was you, he said.
And there was a pleading note in his voice, begging now, to provide some truth, some reality to a world gone mad.
I know it was.
Clint buried his face behind the water bottle. I'm sorry, he said. The boy's face crumbled, and his mother touched his arm. Go watch for our bus, she said, and when it looked like he would argue, she said something low and soft in Spanish, and he retreated, his face miserable and sharp. When he was out of earshot, but still in sight, she glanced at Clint. I'm sorry about that, she said. He's doing better than most kids, but he's... Her teeth worked at her lower lip. I'm sorry. Clint shook his head. No, I wish I could be the person he was looking for. The empty plastic crumbled in his hand, and he pushed himself up. I really wish I could. She was in her purse again. I know. It's okay, really. She held out a card, pressed it into Clint's hand. Look, there's a support group. There's a lot of them, really. This is... It's the website that lists some of them. Most of us, the ones that were here, we go to one or another of them. It's really... Her lashes dipped, and she stood straight and proud. There's no shame in it. Yeah, I know. He gave her a smile that felt too tight on his face. I know. I've got a therapist about... He paused, rubbing the back of his neck with stiff fingers. That. Her grin was sweet. I'm glad. She held out her hand. I'm Amalia. He took her hand, and her fingers were shaking almost as much as his. Neither of them mentioned that. Clint, thanks. She paused, her fingers closing on the strap of her purse, her knuckles white as they gripped the leather. Her eyes slid away, then jerked back. I'm sorry, she said, if this makes you uncomfortable, but... Her smile was sweet, open and sweet and pure. Don't be alone. Clint nodded. Yeah. From a distance, he could see the bus, towering over the cabs and cars and trucks. The bus. Is that yours? Amalia looked and skittered a step to the side. Yes. Yes, it is. I have to... She looked at Clint again. Are you okay? I can stay, if you need. Clint was already shaking his head. No, no, I'm fine. He held up the card. Thanks for this. I'll look into it. She smiled, and just like that, without the fear in her eyes, without the tightness around her mouth, and with color in her cheeks, she was so much younger. Good, she said. I'll pray for you, Clint. His lips twitched up. Thank you. And she meant it. So did he. Thanks. He jammed his hands in his pockets, wedging the card in there too. Bus. Yes. John was waving, but the bus was stuck in traffic half a block out, so she had plenty of time to join him at the curb, the sky blue skirt swirling around her legs, light and life and bright color, where there had been only gray and ash and destruction. John was still watching him, his face half buried in his mother's side, a little too clingy for a boy his age, but maybe not, considering what he'd been through. His mouth turned up, just a little.
"Thank you," he mouthed, face stubborn, because no matter what his mother had said, no matter what Clint had said, he knew.
He knew, and he had faith. Clint exhaled, hard. He fumbled in his pocket, finding the bit of stone where he'd expected it. For an instant, his fingers closed around it, squeezing tight. Then he slipped through the crowd until he was right behind her and John. When the boy looked up, his brows drawing in tight in question, Clint pressed a finger to his lips. John's eyes went wide, and he nodded, just a bit. Clint held out his hand, curled in a loose fist, palm down, in his direction, and John extended a tentative hand. Clint dropped the arrowhead into it. For just an instant, he met the boy's eyes, saw them go wide, saw the joy, the pleasure that flooded the kid's face. Clint pressed two fingers to his brow and flicked the kid a salute, and then a wink, and disappeared into the crowd before John had time to do anything about it. His path took him past the taco truck, and he paused. He fumbled in his pocket for his wallet. The card Amelia had given him was caught in the flap, and he stared at it. His throat tight, he jammed his wallet under his chin and got his phone out. "Hey," he said when the call went through. It's Barton. He grabbed his wallet. "Can we talk? Like, now? Right now? Or, no, you've got other patients. So this afternoon? I know, I'm not supposed to be by again, but..." "I don't have any appointments right now," Dr. O'Brien said, as if it were perfectly normal for him to call, as if he'd done this before, as if it was fine that he did this now, as if there was no reason why she would be surprised or annoyed by the request. "Would you like to speak on the phone? Or are you going to come by and sit with me?" He wrestled some bills out of his wallet, with fingers that shook. "I'm just getting a taco. Then I can be up." He paused. "Do you want one? I can bring you one." His eyes squeezed shut, and he mentally cursed himself for being this idiotic. "That would be very nice. Two, please. Hot." "Hot?" he asked. "Really?" "Really, Agent Barton. And a bag of tortilla chips, if they've got it." "It's your stomach," Clint said. He paused, swallowed. "Thanks, Doc." "Thank you for calling me, Clint." He ignored that, because he was good at ignoring things he wasn't comfortable with. Instead, he placed his order with a smiling vendor and dropped a 20 in the tip cup with a nod of thanks. Folded in the bill, he left the card. He wasn't the only walking wounded on the streets of New York. But maybe they were all capable of getting better, a little at a time, with a little bit of help.